And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from my studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West. The most haunted city in the country. Well, today's February the 4th, 35th day of the year. 330 days remain to the year's over with. And this day marks the approximate midpoint of winter in the Northern Hemisphere and summer in the Southern Hemisphere. Now, let me tell you, in the Southern Hemisphere, their idea of winter, or summer rather, it rains. On this day in 211, following the death of the Roman Emperor Septimus Severus at the Ebo Rocum, modern York in England, while preparing to lead a campaign against the Caledonians, the empire is left under the control of his two quarreling sons, Caracalla and Geta, whom he had instructed to make peace. That don't work. In 960, the coronation of Zhao Kunyin as Emperor Taizu of Song, initiating the Song dynasty of China that would last more than 300 years. 1169, a strong earthquake strikes the Ionian coast of Sicily, causing tens of thousands of injuries and deaths, especially in Catania. 1454, 13 Years' War, Secret Council of the Prussian Confederation sends a formal act of disobedience to the Grand Master of the Teutonic Knights, which sparked the 13 Years' War. The Teutonic Knights, for those that are not familiar, was the German version of the Knights Templar. 1555, John Rogers is burned at the stake, becoming the first English Protestant martyr under Mary I of England. 1703, in Edo, which is now Tokyo, all but one of the 47 Ronin commit seppuku, ritual suicide, as recompense for avenging their master's death. Well, had I been part of the 47, there would have been two that didn't commit seppuku. 1758, city of Macapa in Brazil is founded by Sebastiano Viega Cabral. 1789, George Washington is unanimously elected first president of the U.S. by the U.S. Electoral College. He was a distant uncle, I think it was. 1794, the French legislature abolished slavery throughout all territories of the French First Republic. Be reestablished in the French West Indies in 1802. 1797, the Riobamba earthquake strikes Ecuador, caused up to 40,000 casualties. 1801, John Marshall was sworn in as Chief Justice of the U.S. 1810, Napoleonic Wars, Britain seizes Guadalupe. 1820, the Chilean Navy, under the command of Lord Cochrane, completes the two-day-long capture of Valdivia with just 300 men and two ships. 1825, the Ohio Legislature authorizes the construction of the Ohio and Erie Canal and the Miami and Erie Canal. 1846, the first Mormon pioneers make their exodus from Nauvoo, Illinois, westward towards Salt Lake Valley. 1859, the Codex Sinaiticus is discovered in Egypt. 1861, American Civil War. Montgomery, Alabama, delegates from six breakaway U.S. states meet and form the Confederate States of America. 1899, the Philippine-American War begins with the Battle of Manila. 1832, Second Sino-Japanese War, Harbin, Manchuria falls to Japan. 1938, Hitler appoints himself as head of the Armed Forces High Command. At least he appointed somebody he thought he could trust. 1941, the United States Organization, that's the United Service Organization, the USO, was created to entertain American troops. 1945, World War II, Santo Tomas internment camp is liberated from Japanese authority. Also in 1945, World War II, the Yalta Conference between the Big Three, Churchill, Roosevelt, and Stalin, opens at the Lavadia Palace in the Crimea. 1945, World War II, the British Indian Army and the Imperial Japanese Army begin a series of battles known as the Battle of Pokoku and Irrawaddy River operations. 1948, Ceylon, which is later changed to Sri Lanka, becomes independent within the British Commonwealth. 1961, the Angolan War of Independence and the Greater Portuguese Colonial War begins. 1966, All Nippon Airways Flight 60 plunges into Tokyo Bay, kills 133 people. 1967, Lunar Orbiter Program. Lunar Orbiter 3 lifts off from Cape Canaveral's Launch Complex 13 on its mission to identify possible landing sites for the Surveyor and Apollo spacecraft. 1974, the Symbionese Liberation Army kidnaps Patty Hearst in Berkeley, California on this date. 1974, M-62 coach bombing. The Provisional Irish Republican Army explodes a bomb on a bus carrying off-duty British Armed Forces personnel in Yorkshire, England. 9 soldiers and 3 civilians are killed. 1975, Haiching earthquake, that's a magnitude 7.3, occurs in Haiching, Liaoning, China. 1976, in Guatemala and Honduras, an earthquake kills more than 22,000 people. 1977, a Chicago Transit Authority elevator train rear ends another and derails, kills 11, injures 180. That's the worst accident in the agency's history. 1992, a coup d'etat is led by Hugo Chavez against Venezuelan President Carlos Andres Perez. 1997, en route to Lebanon, the two Israeli Sikorsky CH-53 troop transport helicopters collide in midair over northern Galilee, Israel. Kills 73. 1998, a 5.9 Afghanistan earthquake shakes the Takhar province with a maximum Mercalli intensity of 7, which is very strong. 2,323 are killed and 818 are injured. Damage is considered extreme. 1999, unarmed West African immigrant Amadou Diallo was shot 41 times by 4 plainclothes New York City police officers on an unrelated stakeout, which of course inflamed relations, race relations in the city. 2000, the World Summit Against Cancer for the New Millennium, Charter of Paris, is signed by the President of France, Jacques Chirac, Director General of UNESCO, Koichiro Matsuura, initiating World Cancer Day, which is held on February 4th every year. 2003, the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia adopts a new constitution, becoming a loose confederacy between Montenegro and Serbia. 2004, Facebook, a mainstream online social networking site, is founded by Mark Zuckerberg and Eduardo Severin, and it's become the Electronic Gestapo. 2015, TransAsia Airways Flight 235 with 58 people on board en route from Taiwanese capital Taipei to Kinmen crashes into the Keelung River just after takeoff. 43 people are killed. And in 2020, the COVID-19 pandemic causes all casinos in Macau to be closed down for 15 days. Well, I spent some time at casinos, enjoyed it, as a matter of fact. Holidays and Observances, Christian Feast Day, Andrew Corsini, Gilbert of Sempringham, John de Brito, Godrolf of Arganil, Blessed Rabanus Morris, Rimbert, Day of the Armed Struggle in Angola, earliest day on which Ash Wednesday can fall, March 10th is the latest, celebrated on the first day of Lent in Christianity, in Sri Lanka it's Independence Day, California and Missouri, it's Rosa Parks Day, and it's also World Cancer Day internationally. Rosa Parks, she was a civil rights leader. It's celebrated by California, Missouri, Ohio, Oregon, and Texas. She was a seamstress and secretary for the Montgomery chapter of the NAACP. She was stopped from boarding a city bus by a driver named James Blake, who ordered her to board at the back door and drove off without her. And she vowed to never again ride a bus driven by that man. And that led to demonstrations and sit-ins and everything else you can imagine. Okay. $11.94, 100,000 pieces of gold, I think it was the ransom paid for Richard I, King of England. He was captured en route from the Crusades back to be crowned, actually, in England. Richard I was also known as Richard Lionheart. 1508, Maximilian I assumes imperial title without being crowned. 1586, Robert Dudley, Earl of Leicester, becomes Governor General of the States General of the United Provinces of the Netherlands. 1620, Prince Bethlen Gabor of Hungary signs a peace with Holy Roman Emperor Ferdinand II. 1657, Oliver Cromwell, Lord Protector of the Commonwealth of England, Scotland, and Ireland, grants residency to Luis Carvajal. Can't talk. 1670, Battle of Sinhagad. The Sivahi commander, Tanahasari, recaptures the fort of Sinhagad from the Mughals, scaling the walls with the help of a pet monitor lizard. 1697, three Dutch East India Company ships anchor at Dirk Hartogelin in Australia. 1699, 350 rebellious Streltsy executed in Moscow. 1783, the worst quake in 8 years kills over 50,000 in Calabria in Italy. 1784, the first unmanned balloon flight in Ireland. 1787, the first Anglican bishops of New York and Pennsylvania are consecrated in London. On this day in 1787, Shays' rebellion of debt-ridden Massachusetts farmers officially fails on this date. 1797, an earthquake in Quito, Ecuador, kills 41,000. 1810, Royal Navy seizes Guadeloupe. 1822, free American blacks settle Liberia and West Africa. 1824, J.W. Goodrich introduces rubber galoshes to the public. 1847, the first U.S. telegraph company is established in Maryland. 1849, University of Wisconsin begins with one room and 20 students. 1854, Alvin Bovee proposes the name Republican Party in Ripon, Wisconsin. 1855, soldiers shoot Jewish families in Coro, Venezuela. I don't yet understand what the issue is with someone who is Jewish. 1859, one of the oldest known copies of the Bible, the Codex Sinaiticus, or the Sinai Bible, seen in Egypt by Constantine von Tischendorf, who takes the manuscript home with him. 1861, the Confederate Constitutional Convention meets for the first time. Jefferson Davis is elected president. 1864, the skirmish at Big Black River Bridge in Mississippi took place. 1865, the Hawaiian Board of Education is formed. Also in 1865, Robert E. Lee is formally named General-in-Chief of Confederate Forces. By that time, there wasn't much to command, but... 1866, Mary Baker Eddy reportedly cures her injuries by opening a Bible, and she founded what became known as the Christian Science . 1880, Black Donnelly Massacre in Biddulph, Ontario, Canada. Irish immigrants James, who was 63, Johanna, who was 56, John, who was 32, Thomas, who was 25, and Bridget, who was 21. They were all Donnelly. Murdered in home by members of the Vigilance Committee. In other words, vigilantes. And it was claimed that the Donnellys were actually squatters. . 1887, Interstate Commerce Act authorizes federal regulations of railroads. . 1901, Emperor of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, Franz Joseph I, gives a speech condemning the demands of national groups and calls for economic and social reform. . 1908, the 46 star was added to the U.S. flag for Oklahoma with the addition of the Union of Oklahoma on November 16, 1907. 1913, Lewis Pearlman patents a dismountable auto tire-carrying wheel rim. 1913, the National Institute of Arts and Letters is founded. 1914, Congress approves the Burnett Anti-Immigration Law. 1915, experiments to find the cause of pellagra begin at Mississippi State Penitentiary. 1917, the Belgian Council of Flanders is established. 1919, the city of Bremen, Soviet Republic, is overthrown. 1920, the first flight from London to South Africa departs, takes 1.5 months. 1922, after boycotts and international pressure, Japan agrees to return Shantung Province to China. 1926, the Austrian Chancellor, Seipel, wants Austria to join Germany. 1930, the first tireless, soundless, shockless streetcar tracks are installed in New Orleans. 1933, German President Paul von Hindenburg limits freedom of the press. 1936, the first radioactive substance is produced synthetically. It's known as Radium E. 1939, Glenn Cunningham, who is the officially fastest man in the world, says a 4-minute mile is beyond human effort. Well, that was proved to be wrong. 1941, British tanks occupy Mouse in Libya. 1941, former Dutch Premier de Geer flies to Berlin. 1942, Clinton Pierce becomes the first U.S. general wounded in action in World War II. 1944, the 7th Infantry Division captures Kwajalein in the Pacific. 1949, there was a failed assassination attempt on the Shah of Persia, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. 1952, Tetsuwan Adam by Osamu Tezuka, first published in a weekly shonen magazine in Japan. 1957, the first electric portable typewriters placed on sale in Syracuse, New York. 1959, Israel begins exporting copper ore. 1961, Sputnik 7 launches into Earth orbit. It's a probable Venus probe failure. 1961, the Angolan War of Independence begins. At that time, the dictator of Portugal was Antonio de Oliveira Salazar. 1966, All Nippon Airways 727 crashes off Haneda Airport in Japan, kills 133. 1968, around 100 Indians and Pakistanis from Kenya arrive in Britain, escaping discrimination. 1969, the Palestinian National Congress appoints Yasser Arafat chairman of the PLO. 1970, U.S. performs a nuclear test at the Nevada test site. 1971, the British car maker Rolls-Royce declares itself bankrupt. When I was in New York, I was offered one of those for $40,000. But who in New York needs a car? 1971, Lieutenant General Vernon Erskine Crum becomes General Officer Commanding of the British Army in Northern Ireland. Also in 71, National Guard mobilized to quell rioting in Wilmington, North Carolina. A government exhibit under construction in Brazil collapses, kills 65 people. 1972, Senator Strom Thurmond suggested John Lennon be deported. He was a pothead. Well, that pretty much takes care of everything for our history segment for today. We're going to continue our discussion of UFO abductions. There's a lot of stories of abductions. We got a first story. It comes from Poland. It involves a Polish farmer by the name of Jan Wolski. He claimed he was led into a spaceship by little green men, given some kind of examination, and then released. According to a number of British medical doctors and psychiatrists, Wolski, who was 71 at the time, was telling the truth as he believed it. His encounter occurred May 10, 1978. He was driving a horse-drawn cart near a forest, quite close to his village of Emilson, about 90 miles southeast of Warsaw. He remembered seeing two little men up ahead by the side of the road. When he got closer, he could see they weren't ordinary men. He said their faces were gray-green color. They had large slanting eyes, and the hands appeared to be webbed and of a greenish color. And they were in little one-piece jumpsuit. Well, they jumped into his cart and motioned him to continue and then turn off the road. He said, He got to a clearing where something as big as a bus was hovering in midair, moving gently up and down like a boat on the water and humming gently. Well, a platform was let down, and he was led into the craft by these two little creatures. And the spacecraft went up. He remembers the interior of the craft was dark and empty. A large number of birds had been captured in the forest, and they appeared to be paralyzed. Two more aliens joined the first two, and led Wosk into the craft and motioned for him to take off his clothes, and surprisingly, he did it. And one of the little men came toward him with some sort of device that emitted a clicking sound. And they moved around him with that instrument, indicating he should raise his arms and stand sideways as if they were taking pictures. Well, after a few minutes, they signaled he could put his clothes back on. He stepped to the door, turned around, took off his cap, and said goodbye, and they bowed and smiled. Three witnesses in a nearby village corroborated his story of a strange craft that had hovered into the woods. They testified they had seen a flying ship rise up out of the forest and soar away. When they investigated the site, the villagers said they found bird feathers scattered over the area. Made everybody think there'd been some foul play, don't you know? Additional investigations by authorities revealed that the little green men had been sighted in other parts of the region in subsequent months. UFO magazine in 1987 reported this, the story of Josiah Buist, who had a contactee experience that she reported. Said it began August 23rd, 1975. It was evening she and a friend noticed eight objects moving across South Pacific night sky coming in from the northwest. A few days later, a peculiar stranger, a woman named Valerie, who had pure white hair and a baby soft complexion, approached Josiah and claimed to know her very well. Well, after that, there was a series of peculiar occurrences, somehow all interconnected with the ethereal Valerie, that I can't talk. Joseph's first abduction experience occurred in July of 1980 at about 11 p.m. She and her husband, who was in the military, were in Hawaii. They decided to retire for the evening, and Joseph gone upstairs to take a shower. Afterwards, she said she was cooling off by the bedroom window, which faced to the west, and she looked out and saw a strange, dark orange object heading east. After about 3 minutes passed, she began to feel faint. She called her husband, and he came running in, asked what was wrong. She remembers it was sweat pouring off her face. Husband took her to the Navy Regional Medical Center. Doctors reported her vital signs were normal, and he couldn't see any reason for her faintness. He asked Joseph if she was in pain, and she said that she had experienced no pain or discomfort whatsoever. About a week later, she was sitting on the edge of her bed, planning to read a magazine and go to sleep. Next thing she recalled was lying on a metallic table and looking up at three people staring down at her. They were dressed, she said, in doctor's uniforms with operating masks over their mouths. Their eyes were just slits. She next became aware of three metallic discs hovering over her body, making whirring sounds. Joseph told the doctors that the whirring sounds bothered her, and they said they'd give her something so the sound wouldn't disturb her anymore. She was given a shot in the crevice of her right arm. And after that, she said she felt calmer and wondering what was in store for her. And then she saw him take the large hypodermic needle. She asked what they were going to do and if it would hurt, and they said it would, but only for a minute. Next thing she knew, she was back in her bed. It's 5:30 in the morning. Got out of bed and started to stand up and screamed in pain. She couldn't stand. That excruciating pain lasted throughout the course of the day, she said, becoming progressively worse. Finally, she decided she couldn't endure the pain no longer, so she went to the Army Medical Center. The doctor there had seen her before for minor things and asked her what in the world was wrong with her and why she was crying so hard. She really didn't want to tell him, but felt she'd be sent to see a psychologist, but against her better judgment, she told the doctor the details of her memory of the operation the night before. She told him she'd never had any kind of surgery in her life. Well, the doctor looked at her stomach and asked her about the scar that was clearly visible, and he also wondered about the mark on her arm. He left and came back with another doctor, and she had to tell her story once again. To her utter amazement, the physician said he'd examine another patient early that week who told a similar story. Well, she went to the lab and had blood work and other tests done, and results came back negative as she was had known they would. Doctor told her he couldn't prescribe medication because the tests were negative. Pain continued for 3 weeks straight. Had a burning sensation in her navel, which she was convinced came from the needle the aliens had inserted. Next visit from the aliens was a lot more pleasant. She was offered dark green coffee, she said. They showed her a map of all the military installations around the world, which she didn't understand at all. Kennedy's asked her why there was so much pollution on her planet. Didn't we understand we were destroying ourselves? They asked her if she was afraid to talk about UFOs, and she said she wasn't. Then she asked a question of her own. She asked them what was their purpose in entering our dimension. They said they were simply observing us. Well, she and her husband were transferred from Hawaii to San Diego in 1982. She felt she had left her agony behind in Hawaii, and unfortunately that wasn't to be the case. One night, as she lay down on the couch to fall asleep, she was awakened at 7:30 in the evening with her arm hurting her severely. She called her mother, who lived across the highway, and told her arm was bothering her. When she went over to her parents' home, her mother asked her to remove her blouse, and she turned Joseph's left arm around and said, "What have you done to yourself?" Her mother got a mirror so that Joseph could see. She said, "She's dark-complected, and the mark on her arm is pure white, and it was in the shape of a triangle. She measured it, and it was 2.5 inches on all three sides. The line stretched from the top of the triangle, and there was a white dot in the middle. She said her arm hurt very badly. It went on for 3 weeks before she went to the Navy Regional Medical Center. The doctor said he couldn't x-ray it because it was so swollen, and he asked her about another lump or bump that he felt. Gave her some medication. She came back a month later, and a doctor who had treated her had been transferred. New doctor seemed very understanding, and she had an x-ray taken. Eventually, he called her name and said, "Let's see what the picture's going to tell us, if it tells us anything." Doctor looked at the x-ray and explained that he couldn't make head nor tail of it. Decided to send it back to the hospital. When she got back, the doctor began to act indifferently toward her. She wondered where her x-ray was and what the official medical interpretation was, and the doctor said he didn't have an answer for her, but it looked as though there was a disc in her arm. But he wouldn't discuss the matter any further. Later, she had to undergo a physical examination with another doctor for the adoption of her two daughters, and when the doctor looked at her arm, he asked about the strange markings. Joseph was sent for x-rays, and 2 days later, a technician took the x-rays and said, "I wouldn't touch your arm with a 10-foot pole." When she asked what he meant, he said he couldn't explain it to her. After 6 months, she said, the pain began to subside. She'd finally given up on going to doctors. After all, she hadn't got any tangible results. She'd come to the conclusion they didn't really understand what had happened to her. Well, in September 1986, her husband was transferred to Nevada, and Joseph thought she'd see what could be done there. Once again, she went to the Navy Regional Medical Center, where they took more x-rays. She was still waiting for an answer to the mystery of the unexplained markings on her arm. She said she could ask the persons who put it there, but who are they? I hope that more could have been done by the Navy doctors, but they could only go so far. And civilian doctors basically shunned her. The markings are still visible to the naked eye, and she's told her story over and over, knowing these extraterrestrials are real. She did not imagine all this. Well, in the course of numerous hypnotic regressions that he conducted with UFO abductees, Dr. James Harder said he'd found much evidence to support the theory that there's a means employed to find and re-examine abductees at various intervals, sometimes throughout a person's lifetime, and sometimes without them being aware of it. So it's as if some sort of extraterrestrial group of psychologists is making a study of humans, he said. Dr. Harder and others have discovered that a high percentage of people who have been abducted have undergone multiple experiences with UFO entities. Most abductees have had more than one experience with UFO aliens, usually undergo the first encounter between the ages of 5 and 9. These abductees usually remember the alien as friendly and quite human in appearance. Upon further hypnotic regression and careful probing, though, the investigators have learned the entity didn't look human at all. In most cases, the entity usually tells the child that he'll be back to see him throughout the course of his life. And he also tells the child not to tell his parents about the encounter. In a great number of the cases, it seems the memory of the encounter is somehow blocked out of the child's mind. Harder also discovered during the adult abductee experience, these men and women undergoing the encounter often report having a vague memory of their abductor, and they'll say things like, I've seen this individual before. In Dr. Harder's opinion, a multiple UFO abduction is not a random occurrence. If it were random, the possibility of it happening to the same person more than once is extremely remote. 1981, Barbara Warmouth of Franklin, Ohio, was abducted twice. According to this mother of six, she was studied by 7-foot-tall aliens with yellow cat-like eyes and pointed chins. Her first experience was February 15th. She said she saw an incredibly bright light filling her bedroom at 2 in the morning. Got out of bed and saw through her window a saucer-shaped craft hovering nearby. Under hypnosis, she learned that she'd been aboard the UFO for an hour and 15 minutes. Entities who examined her tried to reassure her. They told her they'd come from a planet called Antares, and they didn't intend her any harm. Her second abduction occurred on August 19, 1981, as she was driving along an interstate highway near her home. This time, her experience occurred in broad daylight, and she lost 2 hours after the blinding glare of a silver UFO forced her to pull off the road. The being that examined her was dressed as the previous ones were, but on this occasion, its face was uncovered. Ms. Warmouth was now able to see more than just a slanted yellow eye. She could perceive the being had no ears, a long, thin nose, a pointed chin, and thin, almost colorless lips. She was placed in a large chair in a room that seemed to her very much like a laboratory, and she saw what appeared to be electronic equipment everywhere. She was given a glass of greenish liquid, and then the experience was over. She woke back up in her car unharmed. She's convinced these aliens are going to abduct her again. Emphasizes she has no fear of these creatures. They've never mistreated her, and they tell her repeatedly they don't intend to harm her. Well, from a unafraid mother, let's go to a 41-year-old Wyoming oil field worker. 1976, he claimed to have been kidnapped by alien beings while he was hunting elk in a remote wilderness area. His name was Carl Higdon, from Rawlins, Wyoming. He said he was lifted aboard a spacecraft and taken millions of miles to another planet where he saw other Earthlings living with alien beings. His impression, the aliens had been taking people from Earth many years, as well as a sizable stock of various animals and fish. He was given a physical examination, told he wasn't suitable for their needs, and taken back to Earth. Now, Dr. Sprinkle, who I've talked about before, from the University of Wyoming, he's a psychologist and UFO investigator, who would regress Barbara's chute to explore her 1981 close encounter, hypnotized Higdon a number of times and got a lot of detail of his experience. He had taken his rifle in a Bard Company truck to the north edge of the Medicine Bow National Forest to hunt wild game. About 4 p.m., he walked to a rise and spotted 5 elk grazing in a clearing a few hundred yards away, picked out the largest buck, lined up his telescopic sights, and pulled the trigger. Well, he couldn't believe his eyes when that powerful bullet from his magnum rifle left the barrel noiselessly and in slow motion floated like a butterfly for about 50 feet before it fell to the ground. Heard a twig snap behind him, he turned to face a strange-looking man who appeared humanoid but was like no human he had ever seen. He was over 6 feet tall, about 180 pounds, had a yellowish skin color. Possessed a head and face that seemed to extend directly into its shoulders. No visible chin or neck. Humanoid had no detectable ears, small eyes with no brows, only a slit of a mouth. Spotted coarse, golden, straw-like hair sticking out from the big creature's head, and 2 antenna-like appendages protruded from its skull. It was wearing a tight-fitting one-piece suit similar to the outfit scuba divers wear. Also had a thick metal belt with a pointed star at the buckle. There was an unidentifiable emblem just below the star. Well, the alien being raised its hand in greeting to Higdon, and a package of pills floated in the hunter's direction. He remembered he swallowed one of the pills when the creature told him to. Next thing he knew, he was inside a cube-shaped object with the being and at least one other alien, together with the 5 elk. Higdon was strapped to a seat with a football-like helmet on his head. Then he underwent what he described as a bizarre trip through space in a small, transparent craft. Most of the journey details were gleaned during the hypnosis session with Dr. Sprinkle. Higdon told the doctor he witnessed portions of what appeared to be a futuristic city of tall spires and towers and revolving multicolored lights. Well, after he had a physical exam, he was returned to the space vehicle. When he looked out at the transparent sides, he observed five other beings who he felt were definitely human. There were three adults and two children. Children were female, and one of the younger adults was female. In spite of his inquiries, Higdon was given no information about these people. UFO sat down in Medicine Bow National Forest again. Higdon was placed back in his truck without incident. His rifle was returned to him, and they took the pills away from him they'd given him. Although he was dazed by the strange experience, he managed to radio for help. And then he blacked out until he was found several hours later. He spent 3 days in the Memorial Hospital of Carbon County in Rawlins, Wyoming, undergoing extensive tests and rambling and shouting about four-day pills and men in black suits. Higdon feels he has recovered from the experience and wouldn't like to forget about the whole thing, but he knows he'll never be able to accomplish such a memory loss. Some of the physical evidence that apparently supports his story is the fact he was able to recover the spent 7mm bullet that was crushed when it smashed into what may have been a force field between him and the elk he intended to shoot. Forensic experts say the odds against retrieving a spent bullet after it had been fired are normally millions to one. And the truck that he was driving was found 6 miles from the location and last remembered parking it in. Is mired in a sinkhole considered inaccessible to normal two-wheel drive vehicles. Members of the search party looking for Higdon also observed strange lights and bizarre phenomena in the area. He apparently experienced a miraculous healing of a tubercular-type scar on his lung. The problem with kidney stones also disappeared after this trip to outer space. Sprinkle has observed that such unexplainable recoveries from ailments often occur among people who claim to have been examined by alien beings. Well, the question that still remains in Dr. Sprinkle's mind is whether Higdon actually had a physically real experience. In other words, was he actually taken aboard a spacecraft and flown somewhere? Whether he was mentally programmed to believe the trip had been to outer space? Anybody who has a technology that is apparently available in the area of UFO phenomena perhaps has even more sophisticated technology as far as consciousness alteration is concerned. In his vast UFO research, Sprinkle said he'd come to believe that in some instances the aliens, whether they be extraterrestrial or spiritual, might be making the abductees think they're looking at a spacecraft. Whoever the intelligences may be that are confounding us, Sprinkle's commented, it appears that they're trying to reach us or teach us that the world is more complex than we formerly believed. He said, We're being taught to perceive that science and religion are not separated in this world. To recognize that as we gain greater technological knowledge, enable us to gain spiritual awareness. Then we've got the Erie Brian Scott case from February 1976. Timothy Green Beckley was the interviewer who conducted an extensive series of interviews with abductee Brian Scott. At that time, Scott was a 32-year-old draftsman for a Mission Viejo firm and a father of two who stated that he'd been repeatedly taken aboard a strange craft piloted by beings from an alien planet. Now, his first abduction reportedly occurred in the Arizona desert near Phoenix in 1971. He said another occurred on December 22nd, 1975, in Garden Grove, California. In between, according to Scott, there were three other terrifying sessions with the aliens and repeated visits to his home by balls of light and a transparent being that called itself the host. Scott believed that his involvement with the aliens began on his 16th birthday, October 12, 1959. He'd been coming home from celebrating when he observed a ball of light hovering over his dog. The ball was oval-shaped, semi-solid, becoming more solid toward the center. 6 to 8 inches in diameter and reddish-orange. Ball of light came right at his head until just a few inches from his face, and then it shot straight up. He believed at that time he'd received some sort of communication from the ball through thoughts and pictures that were apparently transmitted directly into his mind. Born 12 years later, on the evening of March 14, 1971, Scott claimed he was transported aboard a hovering craft with a purple light emanating from its underside. Now, he had no knowledge of why he had been chosen that particular evening to drive into the desert near the Superstition Mountains outside of Phoenix. Remember standing alone, seeing a strange craft flying overhead? Then he felt a strange pulling feeling that lifted him upward into the craft. Incredibly, he found that a friend of his was already inside the spacecraft. Two of them were taken into a small room that began to fill with a fog or a mist. Then they were confronted by four or five very horrifying creatures. Scott described it as having a gray skin like that of a crocodile or a rhino with a thicker patch of hide over the front torso. He said he and his friend were stripped and led off in different directions. He was either carried or made to travel without bodily movement. The beings were 7 feet tall, he said, and looked like a combination of earth animals. They had three fingers and a thumb sticking out to one side. After undergoing a physical examination, he said his mind was transported to an alien world where he observed more of the strange creatures walking about a planet of jagged peaks in a misty atmosphere. After this particular trip, he rejoined his friend, and they were returned to the ground. Last memory he had of that strange craft was a terrible odor like rotten socks, as if somebody hadn't taken off their shoes for more than 20 years. His next experience occurred in the desert near Phoenix, March 22, 1973. That time he began to receive the impression not only was he under observation by the creatures, but he was being slowly educated by them. Well, resultant poltergeist phenomenon in the home is very often associated with UFO contact or abduction experiences. And Scott also had those type of manifestations. He said there are streaks of light. A white light just streaks its way through the house, filters, and then just goes away. Then there's the ball of light itself in the house and outside the house. And there have been pure flashes. They've put a flash cube right up to your eyeball. The light just simply blinds you. You see it for a few seconds and it's gone. And there's another object, the odd brown-shaped thing that's from time to time shown up. It had a dash around the room in crazy directions, and every time it does, it creates some damage to the house. All the electrical and circuits in the house have been melted, frozen, and burned up. And then there was an incident involving his wife, he said. She'd been at work pretty much handling everything that was going on around her. And he got a call that she wasn't feeling well, so I brought her home, and after about 15 minutes of sitting there talking, her saying several things, none of which made any sense to either one of them, said she'd been in the bathroom and suddenly felt hands all over her body, as if somebody broke into the house and was molesting her. Well, when she calmed down, started making explanations to him about what the hell was wrong with her, it was as if, from her description, the guys she'd seen on board the spacecraft had visited her. And this is odd, he said, because she'd never seen any sketches he made of these creatures. So they don't really know if it was an actual materialization or not. But she was so upset he took her to the hospital. Later that evening, it seemed as if she's okay. He was on the phone and the baby's getting into everything, so he couldn't carry on the conversation. So he got up and went looking for his wife and heard a bumping sound and a moan coming from the bathroom, and his wife was on the floor hyperventilating. He got her up onto a chair in the living room, was on his way to call her mother when she just fell flat on her face. So he called the paramedics, and while they were on the way, she got up and fell down again. Then she became hysterical. It took four paramedics to hold her down. She was throwing people around as if they were tissue paper. Guys were thrown backwards against the furniture. Knocked flat. Finally, they loaded up in the ambulance and after she was put in the ambulance, he went back into the house to get the baby, and the baby was gone. He panicked because if you can't find your one-year-old child, you got an issue. So he ran back in around the house. The dog was barking at the back door. They finally found the baby sitting over in a corner of the patio. It had gotten out of its playpen, walked across the kitchen, opened the back door, and went and sat outside. Well, the interesting thing about all this is it all goes back, he believes, to his encounter with the entity who called itself the host. And it began to actually communicate with his wife. It told her things about her past only she would know. And then it told her it'd give her everything in the world she wanted, only they only wanted one thing in return, her soul. Well, the host eventually told Brian Scott he'd come back December 24th, 2011, and he would descend on the spider figure in the Nazca Lines. From there, he'd go to another ancient city sites where Scott and other parties were to build pyramids. I don't have any reports after that, but this is similar to a number of other reports that I've read. Then, initially, when he tried to tell his story to the UFO investigators, they thought he was nuts. But as the investigators looked deeper and deeper, they became curious and intrigued. He was especially impressed when the voice tapes he'd taken of various entities, which either spoke through Scott or from other areas around the house, appeared to produce prints different from the abductee's normal voice. Well, you got a situation such as this. It does raise interesting questions. Of course, the best known abduction was that of Betty and Barney Hill. I think Betty Hill was the aunt of one of the people I used to see at Roswell until Don Smith became king and chased everybody out, didn't agree with him. Now, the case of Betty and Barney Hill has been covered in the press, numerous books, number of television shows, and movies starring Estelle Parsons and James Earl Jones. It would seem that even a person of only curiously interest in UFO matters would be familiar with this case. Now, Betty and Barney Hill were a couple in their 40s and were coming home from a short Canadian vacation to their home in New Hampshire when they saw a bright object in the night sky. It was September 19, 1961. They were in Franconia Notch in the White Mountains. Well, Barney was curious. He stopped the car and used a pair of binoculars to try to get a better look at whatever this light was. And the light revealed itself to be a well-defined disc-like object moving in an irregular pattern across the moonlit sky. So Barney walked out into a nearby field to get a better look. Saw the object plainly, and he was able to see what appeared to be windows, and behind the windows there were people looking at him. Well, he was terrified at what he had seen, so he got back in the car and raced down the road. And then for some unknown reason, he drove the car down a side road where they found six humanoids standing in their path. Unable to control their movements, Betty and Barney Hill were taken to the UFO by these entities. Now, the details of the Hill's story were elicited later only in hypnosis because they had a complete loss of memory concerning the nearly 2 hours following their initial contact with the aliens. They were returned unharmed to their car, at which time the beings told them to forget the abduction. Then the UFO rose up into the air and disappeared from sight, and the Hills went on home, oblivious to the whole thing. The remarkable encounter had probably never been brought to light except for two things. Inexplicable dreams they both had following the events aboard a UFO and the unaccountable 2-hour gap in the journey home from Canada. Now, Barney was a mail carrier and Betty was a social worker, and they continued to be puzzled by what had happened. Finally, Betty sought the help of a psychiatrist friend who suggested the memory return eventually in a few months. But the details of the interruption remained lost till they were revealed through the aid of hypnosis conducted by Dr. Benjamin Simon, a Boston psychiatrist. And even then, it took several weekly sessions. Under hypnosis, the two revealed what allegedly happened that night. And the stories of Betty and Barney agreed in most respects, although neither knew what the other had disclosed until later. Now, both told of being well-treated by aliens, from space, such as humane scientists might treat laboratory animals. They were also given a hypnotic suggestion to forget what happened aboard the UFO. Their induced amnesia had apparently been broken only when they were rehypnotized. The 2 hours aboard the craft consisted of various physical examinations, but the key to the whole event and the factor that may be conclusive in giving the story credibility is the star map Betty claims she was shown while she was on board that UFO. Under hypnosis in 1964, she drew her impression of the map. And that map concurred with other professionally drawn star maps, which in of itself is remarkable since Betty had little understanding of astronomy. But there was also a bonus factor. Her map showed the location of 2 stars called Zeta-1 and Zeta-2 Reticuli, allegedly the home base of the space travelers. The existence of these 2 stars wasn't even confirmed by astronomers until 1969, 8 years after Betty saw the star map aboard the spacecraft. And as an added zinger, the 2 5th magnitude stars are invisible to observers north of Mexico City's latitude. Well, the case of Betty and Barney Hill remains one of the most baffling and thoroughly documented abduction cases. Now, it's not the only one, by any means. But the details that came out of the hypnosis, there's no question they saw something. Now, of course, the debunkers immediately got it in gear and started debunking to beat the band. But at the end of the day, just like the events that happened in Pascagoula in 1973, they could only suggest that it was an illusion. Nobody could prove it because, especially the star map information, there's no way she could have known that. Well, we've pretty much come to the end of today's show. Now, we'll be talking in our next show about the abduction of 2 Mississippi fishermen in Pascagoula, Mississippi. That's quite an interesting story. But until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.